Live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. It's Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandale, and Jake the Snake Schultz with you for the next 2 hours. We start off on our Leaf edition. Boys, we are Lilligren-less.
Oh, you guys will be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's going to move on okay. It's just
I really enjoyed saying the lily pad.
They're going to play San Jose this year. You'll get to say it. Assuming he's not healthy scratched.
By then.
I'm just getting myself back into hockey and Leafs mode. The last two nights have been so...
You've been baseballed up?
World Series heavy, and I've just been dialed into the World Series, and there's nothing else that's mattered to me other than the World Series. So, got to get back into the Leafs mode here with them playing tonight.
Well, we can have a quick moment on the five-run inning where it felt like the bat flip inning, did it not? Like the 40-minute bad defense.
I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed it.
Watching the Yankees crumble?
It was great. I thought it was a really... If it had been game 6 or game 7, it could have been an all-time baseball game, just with everything that happened in it, back and forth, great stuff.
Freddie Freeman too good for it to go 6.
I really wanted it to go 6. Like,
did you?
Well, come on, what's better than that? Sport, just the human interest in it.
I just wanted the Yankees to lose so badly that as soon as you can get them out of there, I'm happy. So I was happy to see the Dodgers get it done.
Yeah.
And our boy Shohei, the almost J. Shohei almost J.
Could he have milked that his shoulder injury a little harder? Holy hell yeah, we get it. Your injuries, your shoulder hurts. Like every
putting the t-shirt on?
No, he's just like he was doing the tiger.
He's on first and he's holding his collar like he needs a sling to hold his arm up. Like,
he
was doing the tiger. When he did something bad, he was like, oh.
You're calling one of the greatest players in the history of the game a phony.
Tiger, tiger or Shohei or both? Yeah, we're calling them dramatic. And you don't need that. And if you're hurt, don't play. If you're not hurt, just play.
Last baseball thing, and I said this to Borny off air, but I'll say it to you. The thing that fascinates me the most about baseball and just like what makes it unique is in a lot of other sports, you can control like who is making the decisions at the most important time. Like in hockey, if it's overtime in the playoffs, you know who you're throwing out there. You have your guys you trust, your guys that you're willing to lose with. Football, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes with the ball in his hand. Basketball, LeBron James is going to have the ball in his hand. Yankees fans, their least favorite player all year. They all complain about Alex Verdugo all the time. And your World Series, your season, can come down to your least favorite player. It just happened to be in the batting order. It's their number 9 hitter. There's nothing else like that in sports where it's just like you can't control who's up there. You can pinch hit, sure, but you don't have any better options off the bench. It's a very unique thing about baseball I love. Anyways.
Yeah.
Go ahead. And you can have a window or a stretch where you totally have lost complete confidence in your star.
Yeah. Yes. Judge. He was a redemption. He hit the home run, and then he hit a fly ball that I actually think I could have caught.
That one's going to sting.
Yankee fans are forgiving, aren't they? They won't remember that.
Gone soft. Them cheering for him so hard. Like, the old Yankee fans would have booed him.
Should have booed
him. They went hard. They went soft.
All right, the Toronto Maple Leafs will welcome in the Seattle Kraken tonight. They make their only visit to Toronto. There will be no Vince Dunn. There will be no Brandon Montour, who had a nice hat trick against Montreal the other night. And
Montour had a kid, right? That's where he went.
Yep. Second child,
yeah.
Baby girl.
Yep.
That's good.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
get him out of town.
Hat-trick, yeah, sort of hat trick.
Get him out of town.
Yeah, love it.
All right, so... You're going to say it or me? It's cookie night for the Leafs?
They're going to lump up the Seattle Kraken tonight. They're going to do it.
No.
I'm not going there.
You're not going there.
No, I'm not going there.
They're going to win tonight.
Okay. Well, yeah, they could win. But I'm not, like, the last time we said cookie night, they lost 6-2 to the Columbus Blue Jackets.
But I think it's fun to set the stage that way. All signs point to it should be a good night. This Kraken team, I understand, is playing pretty decent hockey lately, but they're missing a couple important pieces. Leafs found it last game. Didn't they find it?
I think we're. It's going to be.
Wolves back?
Okay.
Okay, before we get into specifics against Seattle, let's just put a bow on this whole
Lilligren story.
In about 30 minutes, we're going to welcome in Jason Bukala, of course, from Pro Hockey Group and here at Sportsnet. He's a former NHL scout. And I think he's the perfect guy to just talk about having someone in your system for as long as Timothy Liljegren had been in the system, albeit not a top pick, but a first rounder.
Yeah, 17th overall.
17th overall. The time and money you spend in to develop this guy, to hopefully get him in a place where, like, the here and now over the development of someone should be now. Like, you've done all that to get him to the point where now he could fit in with the Matthews and the Mariners and the Nylanders, and you hope that this is the time that you're ready to go get that silver trophy. And he can't get one game in.
No.
Because why? Because of a new coach?
Well, a couple of things. First off, I think this is like a sunk cost fallacy thing where, you know, you've put all that time and money and effort into him, so you should keep trying. No, I don't believe in that. It's like if you don't think, the second you don't think he's going to be a difference maker for your team, then you should get rid of him while you can get the most value for him.
Yeah, that sounds good today, but kind of watched him like 3 or 4 years ago. I never saw him much more than a third pair guy
that's the best case to be made is like that it should have been done.
Yeah. Like years ago.
Yeah. And so is there any concern on your part that this burns them either this year, let's say with their decor, they're struggling and all of a sudden they need some help in the third pair and can't find someone better than Timothy Liljegren. I'll start there. Is there any concern for you there?
Zero.
Okay. Is there any concern for you that he goes to San Jose and becomes a very good player who plays on the second pair, 22 minutes a night, power play two, Leafs are like, we should have kept him?
Now, if I'm playing off the zero part, do I say less than zero or more than zero? Because I'll go zero again.
Zero, zero.
How about new?
He is a serviceable guy that can come in and maybe hold his own for 12 or 14 minutes.
You played 20 minutes a game for them last year, which is a reflection of their decor. Yeah, not him.
It doesn't say anything about Liljegren. It says everything about the lack of depth.
I got to tell you,
over the years,
if Sheldon Keefe had this decor that they had this year, I think Liljegren's minutes would probably be pretty similar to what they are right now. Although he might play over Timmins because of what Keith thought about Timmins, and he didn't really seem to love him a ton. So maybe he would have played more in the bottom pair or whatever, but it feels like if he had the options that Berube has this year, might be pretty similar.
My only complaint is that he should have got more than one game. Like, in preseason, I think he played one game, and then Berube was like, third pair, fourth pair, immediately bumped him down.
I know, but it's
like, give him a couple to show the coach. Maybe he didn't like me in this game. What about tonight?
I think the writing was on the wall the moment he invited Myers and
Hockenpah,
and you just went in a different direction here. And the fact that you had some momentum built with Timmins as well. So he's gone. He's out there. It's over. They actually made the decision to qualify him, but sign him to a new contract. And people were scratching their heads at $3 million and $3 million. Why would you sign him to $3 million when you knew he wasn't going to play? It was because you were protecting an asset.
You were going to qualify him. He might have cost more money.
It was either sign him or have him walk out the door, you know, or, you know, stay at home.
Yeah.
But you protected an asset. You turned that asset yesterday into a third and a six. Those are picks that you're going to need come March. Those are very valuable picks, albeit not maybe game changers to get stars, but
third doesn't hurt.
They will help.
And that third is a good third. You know, like, it's going to be, they have two picks, San Jose, and you're getting the better of their thirds. So you're getting top half of the draft, presumably there. So
they come into play. And the most important thing is now your cap is alleviated.
Yeah. You know, so now they can fit guys under salary cap wise when Hockenpah and Dewar come off IR. The one thing, they need to clear contracts still. Two contracts need to be
Benning will go down.
So Benning will go down. and probably Myers.
They'll need another one. They'll need to make one more probably to fit in that roster and situation.
Benning makes 1.25, I think, and you can bury 1.15. So you're talking about burying, is that 10 grand? I'm bad at math. Maybe it's 100.
And every day that goes back takes less pressure off your salary cap. To your point, if you need to go add more depth, you can go find another Liljegren.
You think you can? Yeah. I mean, I think that come deadline, you have a column today, which we can get to a little bit, but about how you think a second line centerman is going to be part of the deadline deal. Do you think, I guess it depends on how Hakanpää goes, but like it's likely they add another depth Rightshot D at some point.
I think it is a concern for sure. I think it kind of stings a little bit that he is a right-handed shot. And outside of Tanev, Timmins, would be nice to have a third one.
Hakanpää, is he not ready in your rotation?
Yeah, he's ready.
Hakanpää's. Yeah. But I don't know if he can play.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if I can count on him from one week to the next.
It sounds like you can't.
I'd be shocked
if he's a consistent player for the Leafs.
Brube said at practice today that Hakanpää's getting close, whatever that means. No timeline, but he's getting close.
Right.
So today, I did write for the Toronto Star. I talked about Tavares's hat trick and certainly, you know, give him full credit for...
Are we turning the Lily page?
Liljegren?
There's just something I wanted to point out here. I saw it from a guy that we've had on our show a few times here, Joshua Cloak. He sent out a tweet that said, the Leafs made 16 picks through the crucial 2017 and 2018 drafts. 16 draft picks. After the Timothy Liljegren trade, just one player from those drafts, sixth-round pick Pontus Holmberg, remains in the organization.
They're bad picks, Bront.
That is really tough for an organization to continue to find. And then you go back and you look at over those, like 2017, 2018, and after that, you're signing guys that are older, that are aging, to try to find some value in guys that don't cost as much with the guys making the top money. That's when the cheap talent from your drafts are supposed to come up and sort of, like, that's sneaky been a huge part of some of the Leafs'
problems. I don't know how sneaky it is. I think it's been abundantly clear that they always have been chasing because of their inability to develop their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Like, I went back and I looked at the 2020 draft.
Like,
not one player has played one NHL game from that draft.
It's all held together with the super glue of Nylander, Marner, and Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Absolutely.
And where you feel about Morgan.
If you look at the two, you know, the sort of benchmark for this guy had an NHL career, some people say it's 200 games. It's like Dermott, Liljegren, and Sandin all got to those numbers, but, you know, Sandin's making 4.6 on the third pair in Washington right now. Like, none of, you know, Dermott, it was a PTO guy this year. It hasn't been that great.
You got to develop to win championships or to truly be in the mix. You have to develop within your own. It's been a problem with the Leafs.
Liljegren's the only guy from the 2017 draft that played a game. And then in 2018, the most played is, like I said, it was Sandin and Durzi, who played 216. Yeah.
Let's listen to Brubie. Go ahead.
And then it puts so much pressure on you not to screw up a Nazem Kadri trade.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to Craig Berube, clip three, his thoughts on Timothy Liljegren.
Well, I think there's, you know, looking back at training camp, I think guys just were outplaying him a little bit, but he's got ability. He can, you know, skate, move a puck. I wish him all the best. I mean, it just didn't work out here. That's the best way I can put it.
That's coach speak for Pi Felicia. See you later.
He's not my defenseman anymore.
Yeah. That would have been an unbelievable line.
I'm
not going to comment on
Kyrou.
Him.
Kyrou.
Not my defenseman.
If I was Kyrou, I would say I don't want to talk about him. He's not my defenseman anymore.
Yeah. He said guys outplayed him. Like, yeah, they did. They did. And I want to take umbrage with one thing that people say, that he didn't get opportunity here
or whatever.
It's like he had so many chances to take the ball and run and
never did.
Never ran. And it's like, oh, there was so much pressure on him in the moments, you know, because he, you know, was healthy scratch in the playoffs. Like, yeah, pressure is a huge part of pro sports.
especially
managing
in Toronto.
Pressure is like all sports is.
And here it's the most important thing outside
of
it.
So it didn't work. I don't think that one's going to burn them.
Did he mention anything worth listening to about Benning? Or did you just throw that in?
I think the plan for Benning may be the funniest clip of the year in terms of Berube dryness. Let's play it. Clip two.
Well, we'll get him in here. I think he gets in here later today. And then so we'll chat with him and see where he's at. And talk a little bit and then we'll figure it out.
How was your flight?
We'll chat a little bit and
check in, I guess. Hey. On his way to the other side of the arena that we're at, that we share with the Marlies.
Any plans for Halloween?
See where he's at, I guess.
I don't know.
We'll chat with him.
Benning will have to have one hell of a conversation to have much of a chance to be a consistent Maple Leaf, I would say. All right, so. And we don't need the scouting report on Benning, I don't think.
We could play it.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, let's play the clip one, please.
Oh, God.
Pretty just stay home defenseman steady, you know. Blocks a lot of shots, things like that. So, that's what he is.
Wouldn't somebody follow up with that? Can you use that right now?
Yeah.
Is that important to you right now?
Will he be a Maple Leaf? Do you need him?
Yes. No? Nobody followed up with anything?
I don't think they cared enough to follow up. The plan was the follow up. What's the plan?
Yeah.
Chat. We have a chat. You know what the chat's like? Do you know where Rico Coliseum is? Or Coca-Cola? Sorry.
Do you have ways?
Yeah. Okay,
put this in.
You want to follow up a little bit on the article I wrote for the Toronto Star today? Because, coming off of Tavares' hat trick and Pacioretty and Nylander having a good night, we'll see them again tonight. But the feeling is, compared to short-term to long-term, was basically the gist of my article. You can find it on my ex or former Twitter account, at Real Kipper. But let's go to you first, short-term, long-term, on Tavares, the line that we'll see tonight versus Seattle, and where it goes from here.
Well, I would say, so I read your article, thought it was good, as always, thought-provoking. You know, Tavares has had a pretty decent start to the season, I would say, about in line with expectations. He's definitely seen a bit of a diminished role. I don't think he is going to be able to sustain it. The only thing I disagreed with in your article is that, I just don't know who would be available like Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly was perfect.
Yeah.
He was a defensive-minded, solid second-line veteran who's won. He was perfect as a pickup, and I don't think...
Brock Nelson?
I was going to say, I was literally partway through sentence saying, I don't think another guy like that exists. He plays wing, though, doesn't he?
Center, too, as well. He can. But someone a little bit more, I don't know,
Brock
forceful.
Brock Nelson would intrigue me. He's just a big, strong, straight-line guy.
Goal. Can you find...
A lot of crease goals.
Can you find... Or do you go down a little further down and try to find the next Nick Paul or something that just, I don't know if a Ryan O'Reilly would be out there, but to your point, it might be tough. Mm-hmm. It might be really tough to find a prototypical second.
Yeah.
But can you find a hybrid?
Yeah, you could. Brock Nelson would do the trick for me. I just, these are big asks for the type of names we're talking about right now.
But this is the year that, there's no question, first rounders, second rounders, third rounders, take whatever you want. I have to, do I not have to be all in already? Hey, listen, we're not even in November, and we're starting to talk about the Leafs being all in come March.
Is there any chance that Tavares has a good year and you like him and he just, he's more defensive-minded than he used to be, wins a lot of draws?
Based on history, based on trends, I'd say highly unlikely.
The best point you made in your article about that was looking around the Atlantic Division and other 1-2 punches where it's Barkov and Bennett, and it's, who is it, Kucherov and...
Kucherov, Anthony Cirelli.
Yeah, Cirelli and Point.
And Point.
And the other type of, 1-2s that win cups, the really elite.
Yeah. And that's not even Boston seems out of the equation right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. If if the worst case scenario is and you have to go Austin, Tavares, and Domi 1-2-3 to start your Stanley Cup playoffs, are you feeling good about it?
I'm not saying you've lost. It's not terrible. Like, anytime you have Austin as your number one center, you're as good as pretty much any team in the league there. But it falls off. That's a pretty steep decline to 2-3. It's crazy that they haven't given Nylander four games.
No.
Let's just see.
Nah.
I would say that's the thing we say the most on this show that they don't do. It's just like, let's try this for a couple games. Let's see if Domi works with Matthews and Martin.
That's two training camps in a row.
I know.
I
what's going to happen, though? He's going to give up a couple goals?
Something scared them off completely on Willie. And I know I mentioned this a few years ago, and I haven't brought it up, but, like, why not Marner?
I'm all in.
Why not Marner behind Matthews?
I love it.
Is Austin too scared not to play with Marner?
No, he's not. He absolutely tore the league up without him last year.
Separate them then.
Yes.
My favorite stretch of Austin Matthews hockey was last year without Marner when he played with the Bertuzzi and Domi. And he played center.
Have you read Andrew Brewer wrote a really good article on why Mitch Marner would be a good second line center option for them? Obviously, defensively responsible guy, older now, been around the league, and probably as strong as he's going to be in the league for a defensive play. You know, you like a distributor in that spot.
Why was that never?
It's too late now?
I assume they think he's small.
No, it's not too late.
No, it's not.
No.
I assume they think he's too small. That's my assumption, is defensively against Barkov and Bennett or whoever that he can't defend.
But yeah.
Boys, we've been speaking things into existence so far this year, so maybe next practice you'll see him.
Please. Please give us an opportunity to prove that theory then.
Yeah.
That somebody thinks he's too small, which to me is, I don't buy it. But
maybe if Willie played center, you'd get more ice time, which is.
Nice transition there.
Hot debate at practice today.
So was he asked about this? Did he volunteer this information about his ice time?
Would you like to hear the entire clip?
Yes, I would.
Including an exchange with Luke Fox, I think, and with Mark Masters, I think. So clip one on his ice time, Nylander.
Do you miss killing penalties at all?
Yeah, PK is fun. I mean, it's good to get in the game that way. I mean, there's a lot of penalties and stuff like that, so keep you going. But, yeah, of course, I miss PK.
Have you found it an adjustment to play a little less this season? Like, your average ice time's down a couple minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that is a little bit what I've been trying to talk to Chief about, to get that ice time back to where it was before. I think it helps my game a lot to do what I want to be able to do out there. So, yeah, I hope it's something to figure out.
Because it keeps you in, like, a rhythm?
Is that what you're thinking?
I don't like that.
He's asked.
Okay, tell me why. What's the first thing you're thinking of when you say, I don't like that?
It's not your job to ask the coach to play more. Like, the coach has given you the ice time you've earned.
That's happened in 50 years.
Yes, people.
A disgruntled player goes up to the coach and says, I want to play more.
That's fine, but forever. I don't like that we're talking about it here in the media. Like, this seems like something that, like, okay, they can have that chat or whatever. And
he said, that's what I'm trying. Did you catch that? Can you play one more time?
The whole thing?
Well, no, just the part where he says, like, that's what I've been trying to talk to the coach about.
It'd be the second part of the thing after this.
I don't know. Let's listen one more time. Yeah.
He's got to do some on-air editing here.
All right. Forget it. I got the sense that maybe he's talked to him and it's kind of fallen...
On deaf ears.
On deaf ears. Do you think? When he says, I've been trying to...
But I also, he says, it gets me going or whatever. It's like, well, we're not here to facilitate you. You're here to help us go as a team. Maybe you're picking up a theme that I have an issue with here, but, like, this is not about getting
going. I get what you're saying.
It's about how. Yeah. Well, it's not what your country can do for you. It's what you can do for our country.
Yes. Thank you. You know?
Extremely well said.
I don't know. We're not worried about your minutes or points.
JB Kennedy.
Right. And Berube, clip four on Willie's ice time.
I don't focus on ice time so much. I mean, I get Willie out there quite a bit, a lot. I mean, a lot of key situations, obviously, but, you know, at the same time, you know, I've said this all along. We wanna be a good team. Everybody needs to be involved. So I try to get Willie out there as much as I can.
I think it's been settled. You're gonna take what I give you.
Yeah, so true.
You know,
this is what Willie's talking about. He's been trying. Yeah.
Ready to go in, coach. Give me a chance.
We have a second one, clip five on his asking for more ice time.
I have no problem with it. You know, and I do try to get him, you know, more. We talk about it, and he killed penalties last year. He's not killing penalties this year, so it's, you know, a little bit of ice time there, that's off, you know. So you know, what I do is I try to get him out there if deserved as much as I can.
See, I have no
deserve.
I have no problem with you asking for a raise.
Right. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. Yeah. And I also think, you know, sorry about your minutes, but on the penalty kill, I would like to put out who I believe are our 4 to 6 best penalty killers. If I don't think you're in that.
I would like him to play more than 17, 12 in a hockey game.
For sure. For
if
sure.
I'm being totally honest, like, I would like him to play more. He's really good.
I don't disagree with the idea. Forwards. I actually think Willie's right here. Willie is his best when he plays more, that there could be more opportunities for him to play more. And even the penalty kill is not terrible for him.
So you're just saying, I don't want to hear you.
Correct.
Like, cry like a baby to the media.
It's game 10. New coach. We're all sorting things out here. Fine to go ahead and ask your coach and say, I think I'm pretty good at this thing that you don't think I'm pretty good at. Just give me a chance to show you. Like, I don't mind that conversation.
So like I said, it's not new news that a star player wants more ice time. It's happened for
not exactly
ever.
Breaking news.
But what is also no new news is that, like, this could go one of two ways. It could kind of sort itself out, or
snowball.
It could be a bit of a problem here.
Some coaches love a distraction.
Yeah. And one of those kind of uncomfortable situations for a lot of players in the dressing room when a guy's not happy. Happens every year on every team somewhere down the road. Sometimes it's a lot more noticeable to us in the media or the fans. Sometimes it's not, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see this going?
I just think that I've been wrong before, but I think I know Willie enough to know that he's not going to make a big deal out of it and that he'll hopefully earn his ice time back. I don't know him to be a sulker, but I could see Berube hating the questions from the media. Like, let's say Berube sees him as an 18.5-minute guy with no PK. This question is going to come up a lot because Willie's best year was a 20-minute guy, and the media is going to be like this.
I've known Craig a long time.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to bother him. He's going to answer. You want me to answer it 50 times? I'm going to give you the same answer 50 ways, but they'll all equal the same.
That's the bottom line. So,
and that's the way. He's going to be short and sweet. And it's like, you know, I think I'm doing that for him. This is what he won't get tiresome of it, but it'll also put him in a position where, you know, he's going to have to work through it. No different than I'm sure he did in St. Louis with Kyrou, and I want it a certain way, and if you don't give it to me a certain way, then you're locked in at 17, 18 minutes. Yep. You want to get to 20, this is what I want.
But Willie isn't Kyrou. Like, Willie is looked upon, like, he's one of the premier players in the league that's playing 2 minutes less a game.
Right now, he's looking a lot more like Kyrou than you think, my friend.
I don't agree. Like, I think
he's not Kyrou, but he's looking like Kyrou.
It's a chicken and the egg here, though. He's playing 2 minutes less a game. He's getting punished for stuff. It's like,
I want more ice time. Play better.
Haven't we been through this already with this guy?
Right.
Like, he had his best year playing a ton. He's one of the three best players in the team. Play him more.
It's been around for 100 years. I can play better if you give me more ice time.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll play better, and I will give you more ice time.
All right. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm...
It's the wrong guy to pick a fight with, if you ask me.
I do think,
No.
Berube
should...
Listen,
Willie shouldn't fight him. Spoke earlier this week about accountability.
Yeah, but he's got 10 points in 10 games.
You want to get to a guy more than any other way?
But this is so classic.
You take away the thing that means most to him.
But this is classic, the guy that you're picking on.
It is.
This is not account. Sheldon Keefe had this accountability where it's like Willie benched. It's like it's the accountability time is when you bench Matthews or you bench Marner, and that's the end of accountability.
Listen, Willie got a lot out of this guy. Or sorry, Willie. Sheldon got a lot out of that guy.
If we were to have gone back in September and said, if a guy like Craig Berube butts heads with anybody on the roster.
Number one, Willie.
By a country mile, Willie.
Yeah. Stylistically, because of the way he plays.
Yeah.
Is there any other reason why?
Well, attitude, yeah. And Willie is, Willie, by the way, that we're talking about right now, they've played 10 games. He has 6 goals.
Yeah.
He's leading the team in scoring.
He probably, you know, up a little bit.
Right. It's,
that's all I'm asking.
But there are times when Willie looks all world.
Yeah.
Most nights he's now, to me. Most nights. We've gone past the inconsistent Willie. Like, he has his defensive gaps. It's just the found wallet thing. Understanding that it's give and take.
There's some nights there's still that Willie. The drive-bys earlier.
You have to make peace with that.
Yes.
From Willie. Because if you don't, you're going to miss out on a great player. And you're going to have him taped to your bench to prove a point that's never going to change him.
Boys, they've all been here for like 8 years. You've won one round. Where is that we have to live with this and you just got to accept it?
Because they've not
won
played
one
him.
Round.
They've doing it, not play him. Last year was the first year he played decent ice time.
Yeah.
He's been an 18-minute guy.
And look where it got him.
I'm just saying that, like, this is accountability. You gotta find somebody.
I don't think Willie's been bad. I agree that it's just a guy that he's like, I don't like this.
There's some nights he's all world, and there's some nights he's Willie.
Yes, of course.
But there's, okay, we should go because we gotta get to Books. But there's most nights he's all world. And he missed. He flew by. Yeah, no duh, it's Willie.
100 points last year. 98 points last year.
But how many other players in the league fly by? Lots of forwards and wingers who are really highly skilled that fly by. And it's just like, I don't want this guy to have getting his minutes taken down because the coach doesn't think he's good enough defensively. I don't care about his defense.
It is the perfect guy that you would expect Berube to come in and be like, that's not.
Anyways.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll get Jason Bukala's thoughts on the Leafs, including sending the lily pad out west. That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Am I still holding for TV? I'm clear.
Hi, TV.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. So we're just... Before the break, we're talking about Willie Nylander's ice time.
Mm-hmm.
So 5-on-5, those minutes are normal. It's just he's not killing penalties anymore. Is that where the ice time's been lost?
I don't know exactly without doing a deep dive here.
What I need you for.
Well, he's playing 14.02 at even strength per game.
And how does that compare to Matthews and Marner?
Marner is playing 15.05 and Matthews 14.46. So he is within 40 seconds of Matthews and 50 seconds of Marner. Not far behind at even strength. So presumably then the difference is special teams. It's a big gap. He's 3.5 minutes behind Marner.
Yeah. Now would that...
Leafs are taking a ton of penalties.
Would that be lost? That would be lost on the specialty teams.
The shorthanded time on ice per game... he is at 30 seconds while Matthews is killing 204 and Marner is killing 236. So there's most of your time.
Okay, just to stay on this before we get to Jason Bukala, is Matthews and Marner killing penalties?
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about that much.
Not much.
At all.
Okay, let's get to Jason because he's ready, and then maybe we can follow up on that, on where we are on that.
He is.
There you are, my friend. How are you?
Hey, fellas. I'm doing great. Happy Halloween, boys.
Really appreciate it. Earlier in the show, I had mentioned because of your scouting background, you'd be the perfect guy to start with the question on how would a scouting staff feel, if not an overall management feel, when you've put time and money and development into a player, albeit a first rounder like Timothy Liljegren was how many years ago? Five?
No, seven.
Seven.
2017.
And you're hoping that he gets to a place where he can be a key contributor on a team that's driving towards trying to win a Stanley Cup, a contender, and it just doesn't happen. Yes, you got assets back. This wasn't, you know, basically, you know, a giveaway here. But how does that make you feel as a first of all, a scouting staff? Forget about presidents and general managers for a second.
I would argue today, given the state of the Leafs, that it really doesn't matter that much, to be honest with you. I feel like they're turning over a new leaf here, and they're going in a different direction with the type of player that they want to acquire and how they want to manage their draft capital going forward, Kipper. So I don't know that on balance, when you look at the entire organization, I guess if you go up to the president's chair and you start talking about Shanny and stuff like that, it absolutely, when you put that type of development time into a player, it's not only costly, but how many other opportunities have you missed along the way? That's something that we never discuss. And that's why I always say, never fall too in love with your prospects. And, you know, I don't know if there was other opportunities to trade him over the course of the last number of years in his development cycle, but the previous regime really valued this type of player, and I think they wanted to try and get the most out of him, but the fit wasn't there. And I have to be honest with you, and I did write about it today, I thought he was miscast from the beginning, to be perfectly honest. I've scouted this guy forever, since 2015, and when he was skating on the big ice overseas, guys, as an underage and then a draft eligible, loved his boots, loved how he could get from A to B, wasn't sure about his brain sometimes. He seemed to find ways to take pucks into traffic or he was under duress too often given the size of the ice sheet and the fact that he skated the way he did it, So yeah, I don't know. I think it's I understand the angle. There's a lot of investment here, boy, and a lot of opportunities to move on from players long before 7 years, and now you see a depressed value of return, I would suggest.
And does that affect some people behind the scenes, like on the scouting staff, who would have pushed for him? Like, is this how scouts end up out of job somewhere if they say, hey, this is a guy that you liked and just didn't work out? Does that hurt?
I think the reflection has already taken place long before this trade was made.
Really?
So I believe that Kyle Dubas and Wes Clark valued a certain type of player, a certain type of style player. 2017, Mark Hunter was on his way out. That's the same time that Wes Clark left my staff in Florida to come to Toronto. And I can tell you from being in a meeting with Wes that the way that their trajectory is and the way that they think about players is a certain type. And I would not hold anybody accountable regionally for those decisions. I'll put it to you that way, Borny. It came from within the room at the hierarchy level. And that can be dangerous. I've been there too. I've had bias. I'm not a perfect scout. Like, I've had bias on players myself, right? I hope not, I guess would be my short answer, because I think it was a different way of thinking.
We're talking to Jason Bukala, Pro Hockey Group and Sportsnet's top analyst when it comes to NHL scouting, former scout himself. So Books, he ends up signing a $3 million contract that was to protect an asset that clearly had value based on the third and the sixth round pick and Benning coming back, I guess. But what happens when you're a scout, you've got a certain player that looks a certain way, but then doesn't mix with a coach, right? And were you surprised that Berube came in, gave him all but one game and kind of said, no, Timmins is ahead of you. Hakanpää, who's not even played yet, is ahead of you, and so is Myers here. Like, is that part of the equation once upon a time at the draft table where you're like, why am I drafting this guy when I know a coach won't play him, doesn't like that guy?
Yeah, I'd like to sit here and tell you that that doesn't happen, but I'd be lying through my teeth. The reality, though, in today's NHL is that the shelf life of the coach is so short that you can't really introduce that into the discussion. I will say this, though, Kipper, when I was in Nashville, when I started my career, Barry Trotz was there forever, and David Poile had a way, and Jeff Kelty, and he's still there, Jeff Kelty. They had a structure there in place that was going to allow the coach to, I guess it was more of a group effort, and the coach had more, I'm not going to say stay at the draft table, but there was a type that everybody agreed that we would draft, or we wanted to play a certain style, and it would fit the coach's wish list, I guess, is the best way to put it. As far as Liljegren goes, for me, I was staring at two bodies in the summer when Berube got hired. I was staring at Robertson and I was staring at Liljegren. And I'm thinking to myself, what's not going to work here? Where's something not going to fit? And Robertson so far has earned, quite a bit of a runway here with the coach. I'm not surprised, though, on the Liljegren thing. And let's not forget, Mike Van Ryan and Berube worked together in St. Louis before Mike's running the D, and they would have had intimate conversations about Mike knows what Craig likes in a player, so these conversations definitely would have taken place.
So you would have seen players leave your organization in Florida, go other places, and been worried about them becoming great players anytime someone leaves your organization. Any concern if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs that Liljegren goes out and makes you look silly over his career here?
No.
Okay.
Not.
Next question.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. If this was a Craig Berube press conference, it would be move on. But Borny, I wasn't buying the stock from 2015 on the elevated trust value in terms of the way that I think he can process the game at the NHL level in high leverage situations. He spiked on occasion, but this isn't something that personally for me, I mean, I hope he does well. I'm not that guy, but I'm not going to sit here and suggest for a second that I would lose any sleep over it.
Gotcha.
The signing of Jake McCabe, the free agent signings of OEL and Tanev. And now we're looking at a blue line that's, with the exception of Morgan Riley now, is the only original draft pick. Am I right in saying that?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Can you win a Stanley Cup this way? Or do you, at some point, do you have to draft one or two guys in a scenario where they can carry you in their prime to a Stanley Cup?
Let me put it to you this way, guys. The Leafs, you need to draft and develop. You absolutely need to draft and develop your own players, Kipper, and you have to. They have to supplant the veterans along the way, and they have to save you some dough along the way too when you got to start making payments out to higher end players. The model, Toronto's in a very precarious situation. They have to trade for assets to win now. They haven't had a ton of draft capital, or have they? If you look down through their drafting over the last several years, of the last 37 picks that they've made, they have three NHL players. And that's a problem. That is a problem. If the Florida Panthers just won the Stanley Cup, and from 2016 to 2020, they've got eight full-time regular players either on their roster or traded out for assets elsewhere. So
that's incredible.
And Dallas is on the cusp of the same, aren't they? So, like, the Florida Panthers were able to trade out Owen Tippett and another first-round draft pick to the Philadelphia Flyers for Claude Giroux. It didn't work that year, but they still didn't miss a beat. Why? Because they had others coming, and they had other assets that were filling the cupboards. So Crabtree Living and his staff are in a tough spot. They want a certain player type. They haven't. They don't really have any homegrown players that fit the bill, if you will, like their player type, and they're limited on draft capital. So the rate of return on a guy like Liljegren, and he won't be the only one. There'll be others. The rate of return on these guys is depressed. A third and a sixth, but at least they get something.
Yeah, we know at the deadline there's certainly more value on defensemen. Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you. You wrote an article for Sportsnet.ca on how. Am I good to turn the Liljegren page? Are you good on that? On Pierre Dubois, who is a hot button guy, very polarizing, big, talented, whatever, but frustrates people. He has now gone from the Kings to the Capitals, and you wrote an article about how that's fitting, how he's doing in Washington. Give us that answer.
It's much the same, despite what Spencer Carberry is promoting out there, which is to make sure that the player is very comfortable, I would say, mm-hmm. Getting out in front of the media saying he's our best player. The optics suggest one thing. The results are very similar to every stop so far along the way. So big body, we all wish he gave a little bit more at any given time. But the underlying numbers, Borny, are very similar to every stop along the way so far. But his line mates have spiked, like the shooting percentage from Tom Wilson and Connor McMichael certainly found his groove. But he's Connor McMichael's the exact same version right now as he was last year. So I hope for the player and the organization that this goes well, for the long haul. But he's in the bottom half in their plus minus. He's below 50% in faceoffs. 11 hits. Can you imagine if you're 6'4", 225 pounds? But, I'd like to gnaw on people's ankles if I was a little guy. But if I'm a big guy like that, I'm running over everybody to make sure I got space all the time. So I know that there's been a lot of accolades thrown his way. I'm not going to sit here right now and say that I'm buying that stock long term either. It's just been okay. We'll see how it goes. Washington's off to a good start. But the coach is definitely making sure that he's uber comfortable right now.
Got to ask you quickly, if we're on the topic of center icemen, I wrote an article today for the Toronto Star about Tavares doing a great job Monday night of holding the fort for the Toronto Maple Leafs on a power play that can't get going, or a slow out of the gate Austin Matthews. But ultimately, are the Leafs destined to a few years ago where they need to pull a trigger and shore up the center ice position once again, i.e. a Ryan O'Reilly type of trade? And if so, Books, who do you envision out there? We had mentioned Brock Nelson of the Islanders, but first of all, your thoughts on that centerman position for the Leafs?
Brock Nelson would be great. A lot of people don't appreciate Brock Nelson. He's got some synergy there with Tavares already. I haven't gone down the rabbit hole yet to start envisioning who that centerman could be, because I'm trying to see when Connor Dewar comes back and where the money is and how all this stuff is going to fit. Mm-hmm. But that is the exact type of player that I would absolutely go after, because he's proven in high leverage situations, guys like that, that he can produce. He's been a good playoff performer, and he'd be a responsible target. I'd like to circle back on that as a project, to be honest with you, because I haven't put a lot of thought into it. But listen, power play, center ice, a lot of different things. I read today Nylander wants more ice time. I don't like that when that comes. I don't like when people talk about that, but whatever. He's got to deal with Berube behind closed doors, not me. So good luck, kid. But,
my guy.
It's one of those things. Right? Right? More depth there, more speed. Boy, did you guys watch New Jersey last night run rampant over Vancouver?
Fast team. Fast team. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's a track meet.
Yeah, that is. Before we let you go, wanted to ask, you're doing, you've got a new business venture you're involved with, Drive Hockey Analytics. Is that right?
Yes, Drive Hockey Analytics. I just partnered with them. Thanks for bringing us up. If anybody's interested in NHL Edge on NHL.com, Drive Analytics is a company that essentially mirrors the same sort of scenario. You can run combine type testing and analysis and player development in homegrown ranks. So minor hockey ranks, major junior ranks, et cetera, et cetera. And it feeds the eye test with some real hardcore results and numbers, which is, I never thought I'd get to my career. I'd be saying some stuff like that, but I'm there. And here we are.
Books, great stuff as always, man. Thanks for joining us.
Always. No problem, boys. We'll see you later. Have a good night tonight.
Thanks, Books. Appreciate it.
That is Jason Bukla, Pro Hockey Group and Sportsnet.
We didn't even mention it's Halloween today. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, thanks.
You know what?
You don't care.
I only care the following day.
I knew you were going to say that.
Candy.
The kids' candy.
Yeah. The kids' candy.
I don't know if I can skim the first night. It's tough. They got pretty good eyes on it, but then they start sleeping on it.
Kipper, don't worry. I bought 40 pieces. I'll get two people at my door, so I'll bring in 38 pieces.
What, do you live in the woods?
Nice. No, I live on a busy street.
Okay, we're still warming up here on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. When we return, we get former NHL forward Rob Brown. Life in Edmonton without Connor McDavid. What's that going to be like? And I'll ask you guys in the next at the top of the next hour. Can Connor still win league scoring title?
Yeah.
Can he win the MVP? Missing 8 or 10 games?
Good question. Good conversation.
We're back. Don't go away.